Starbucks and its global coffee empire have finally made a beachhead in a country that until now may have been a fortress, Italy. Just last year, Lavazza and Illy Cafe opened their own flagship stores near the Milan shop to remind Italians of who the local top dogs are. It's more expensive, too, about $2 for an espresso, which is nearly double what Italians are used to.
The next escalation in the U.S.-China trade war might be around the corner. At midnight Thursday, a public comment period ends for President Donald Trump's next wave of tariffs. He's expected to pull the trigger on another $200 billion worth of goods from China as soon as Friday. A way out doesn't seem likely soon. On Wednesday, Trump said he thinks the U.S. has done well in talks with Beijing, but, quote, we're not prepared to make the deal that they'd like to make.
Botswana was once known as a sanctuary for elephants, home to the world's largest elephant population. But now, conservationists have discovered 87 of them slaughtered in just the last few months. Anti-poaching activists say it's a sign of a major spike in poaching activity, where despite existing sales bans, the money on the black market is enough to lure poachers.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's September 7th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for being with us this morning here on another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We have a good show for you today on this Jobs Report Friday. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. We're going to bring in Paul in just a few seconds for our weekly conversation. A little bit later on, Brian Summers from Skift is going to be here with our regular Friday talk as well. Brian has some news, more news on bag fees going up. That'll be about 5:40 this morning. First, a couple of headlines before we get going this morning. U.S. and Canadian negotiators will extend at least through Friday their negotiations to reach a deal that would allow Canada to remain in a North American trade bloc. Canada's envoy, the foreign affairs minister of the country, left a five-minute-long meeting with the U.S. trade representative last night. She told reporters it was important to discuss a couple of issues face-to-face, but offered no further details. She added that the two sides agreed to meet again today. She's been negotiating in Washington since last week. Also today, Tesla's CEO, Tesla has been sued by another investor who alleges that CEO Elon Musk artificially manipulated the stock price to damage investors who bet against his company. A short seller named Andrew Left alleges that Tesla and Musk damaged all shareholders when Musk tweeted August 7th that he had secured funding to take the company private. The tweet pushed the electric vehicle maker's stock price up 11% that day, but subsequently fell when Musk revealed that funding wasn't locked down. On August 24th, he announced that the private going private was off. It is Jobs Report Friday. It looks like employers may have added upwards of 180,000 jobs in August. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management, as he is every Friday morning, to talk about this and other stuff. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
Is that generally the target, 180 to 189, I guess?
That's the going range, if you will. But what's kind of interesting is somebody had pulled together a study on what happens in August. And I think as we've shifted the school year a little bit earlier and some other factors that are going on, August is notorious for misses. So as much as we'd like to see that 187, that's what's expected, we could see a print of maybe 100,000 non-farm payroll. So August is one that tends to miss the target for whatever reason on a consistent basis over the last 10 to 12 years or so.
Unemployment rate could fall to 3.8%, but again, we'll be looking at the wage part of the story. Doesn't look good either.
No, it's stuck in that 2.7, 2.8 range, and there's a couple factors that are going on, and we've talked about them pretty consistently since we saw the passage of the tax legislation. A lot of people, a lot of the companies are paying out bonuses, which are one-time deals, which don't get captured in the wage growth numbers. And a lot of the companies are taking the tax gains that they've had and buying back their own stock. And that's providing a little bit of a boost to the markets, but that's what's using up the cash. So it's not really going back into new plant and equipment, not necessarily going back to employees on a consistent basis, but a lot of it going back to the shareholders.
The ADP report yesterday had 163,000 jobs created in August, private sector jobs. That's been, I think, the weakest since October of last year.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And again, it doesn't necessarily the monthly numbers, the unemployment numbers don't necessarily follow ADP in the general direction. Yes, but it's not a good indication of exactly what we're going to see. One of the things that was good was that we saw a lot of manufacturing still. We saw $19,000 from the ADP report in new job services. We're up 139. Natural resources and minings were down a little bit. So manufacturing is still producing a fair amount of jobs, which is a good thing. We'd still like to see that continue. But it's going to be, you know, trying to get more out of the economy, more job growth out of this economy when we're pretty close to what many expect to be full employment is going to be a very, very difficult task at this point.
Yeah, and if you look at all of the data points, like for instance, yesterday, initial jobless claims came in at the lowest since 1969.
Right.
But the Challenger job cuts report showed about 40,000 jobs were cut last month, and the number of layoffs that are in the works is on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're competing data points.
There are, and when you look at a lot of the manufacturing, and we talked about it last week as far as the hard and soft data, the survey data, how you feeling, how are things going, and the real numbers, the durable goods orders were a little bit soft, but that's a lot would have to do with airline orders and defense spending. But when you take a look at a lot of the manufacturing numbers, some of those are starting to weaken here, and there's some discussion among the folks on Wall Street that we've seen the best, and that was second quarter, and so we're going to tail off from here. That doesn't mean that we're going into a recession immediately. It just means that we're not growing as fast as we were, and that's from the tax cuts and some of the other legislation that went through. We're going to see and have started to see some of the headwinds from tariffs. I think that's going to be something that will continue. And really, the trade numbers that were out the other day were not good at all. And so it's going in the wrong direction as far as the administration is concerned, which may embolden them to increase the amount of tariffs.
Yeah, we'll get into more trade talk and talk a little bit about how that might be impacting anything. I just wanted to add one note on the job cuts, Challenger Gray Christmas job cuts report. A big chunk of the jobs cut that they had in the report was for Johnson Controls up in Wisconsin. Announced plans to lay off and cut 9,200 people by 2020. So that probably pushed that number a little higher than it may have been otherwise.
Yeah, and it's part of the reason why when we look at the numbers, both the stuff that'll come out here later on, the unemployment report and jobs growth and so on, is not so much the month-by-month numbers, but we tend to smooth it out, take a look at the last 3-4 months or year-over-year numbers, and that smooths out some of the noisier month-to-month type of data. And when we look at that, the last 3 months or so have been very strong, and with a lot of the other data points that we're seeing, we're coming off the boil a little bit. Again, not anywhere near a recession or things that we should really worry about, but it is slower than what we've experienced over the last few months.
Paul, there was a lot of other information, a lot of other data points this week. We saw the Red Book on Wednesday. I already mentioned the Challenger job cut report, but we saw some manufacturing numbers, the ISM, and you mentioned factory orders already as well. These data points show what were the highlights. The Red Book one was pretty good, right?
The Red Book numbers were very good and indicated that retail sales are growing at 5 to 6% a year, which is tremendous, and points to the fact that we're buying more stuff, and a lot of it is not manufactured here. So we're buying more stuff overseas, which is leading to the problems with the trade deficit. So a lot of the data points that we saw this week are indicating to me, at least, that we're slowing down from that 4% growth rate that we saw in the second quarter. We're still probably growing at about 3% or so, which is in line with, maybe a little bit ahead of, what we saw over the prior 10 years since the end of the recession. So we're back to what passes for normal, and it's what the expectation was coming into this year when we saw the tax breaks coming through, that we would get an initial pop in growth that would dissipate. It's a one-time add to economic growth, but it's not anything that's going to persist. So we're now back to what we've seen as long-term economic growth trends of 2.5% to 3%. And I think the numbers that we're seeing over this week are indicating that As I mentioned before, we're just coming off the boil a little bit. We're coming down to what has historically been, at least over the last 10 years, normal economic growth numbers.
People spending money probably are doing it with credit cards. A lot of them are doing it with credit cards, which means they're probably not saving any money. That's probably bad news, right, for investors, especially people saving for retirement. They should be saving more, right?
They should be. And that's, you know, and that's one of the things when you take a look at the discussion on trade and tariffs, it's not so much the reason that we have a trade deficit is because of the tariffs. It's because of the lack of savings. So when you take a look at those countries where they are importing less, they're saving more, and the United States historically has been a very spending type of an economy, very reliant on the consumer to continue to spend, and all of those goods and services and so on, a lot of them are coming from the from around the world, not being done here, and that's one of the main reasons for our trade problems is a lack of savings. But secondarily is, yeah, we're constantly looking at, and you get this when you talk to a lot of different people about the future and retirement, and that is something that is so far in the future, so far away, until you turn your paper and you're going, oh shoot, now what?
Yeah.
I'm ready to retire and I don't have enough. I really should have saved more. And really the best time to do it is today. Don't wait until next week. You might as well get started today. The sooner you start, the easier it will be.
And then I mentioned the credit card part of this, because later this month, the Fed has its meeting. And we're going to see probably another interest rate hike. Right?
There's a 99.8% chance, which is better than a Dove bar, as far as raising interest rates. So they're anticipated to raise rates this month. They were about 75% chance of going in December. There's not a lot of economic data that will make them change their minds. So we think that we could see. Now it's at 1.75%, so 2% Fed funds rate. We can be close to 2.5% by the end of the year.
So with that in mind, if you have a high-interest credit card, pay it off now.
Pay it off. I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, you say, okay, I'm getting charged 18% on my credit card, for example, and should I save money for retirement, which is better? Well, you're going to save 18%. So in essence, you're making 18% if you pay off that credit card. Right now, the financial markets aren't giving you that 18% rate of return. So it makes a lot of sense to pay off that credit card as fast as you can. The other side of it, though, is if you have a mortgage and your interest rate's at 3% or 4%, the financial markets are giving you more than that. So it does not make sense to hurry up and pay off your mortgage as much as you would like to be debt-free. That kind of debt is actually good debt in the way that you're able to write off a part of that on your tax return. And the housing is not growing as much either. So it's an asset that grows at a fairly slow rate. And it makes sense to carry some debt on that.
So as we look at our portfolios here at the end of the week, any changes, anything that's a good buy or a good sell?
Yeah, we've talked about the international markets a lot, and the international markets have really come under a lot of pressure in the last couple of weeks. Emerging markets have gone down 20% in the last 3-4 months, and we're seeing technology in general come down a little bit. And we've shifted our portfolios a little bit more away from growth, a little bit more toward the value side of the house. So we're looking at more consumer staples and utilities and some of the safer parts of the market. That's not necessarily an indication that we're going to see a huge decline in the market. It's a normal rotation that we're seeing in the markets. And right now we're kind of standing pat with our international holdings. We're not really adding to it at this point. But I think, again, what they're experiencing is what we're seeing in the higher dollar, rising interest rates. So we've got probably another 6 months or so of rough going in the international markets before I think you start to see them turn around. So for those that are interested, don't have a lot internationally, it's not a bad time to slowly put some money to work in international. And U.S., it's still large cap, but I think we should be shifting away a little bit from technology toward the rest of the markets.
Paul, this is a great conversation. What if people want to have it with you off the air?
They can get a hold of me email. It is pnolte@kingsviewam.com. They can drop me a note and be happy to correspond that way.
Oh, lovely. And you want to come back later this morning and we can do a podcast on the jobs report.
Absolutely. We'll see how good our prognostications were.
Lovely. So we'll do that mid-morning and post it at WGNradio.com. We'll alert everybody out there via Twitter and Facebook and all of the other ways that we alert you when that podcast is live. So we'll see you a little bit later on this morning.
Excellent.
Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago startup ShipBob raised $40 million in new funding to help small e-commerce companies ship products with Amazon-like speeds. ShipBob software lets companies manage their inventory from one dashboard and get items shipped in 2 days or less. Walmart is now partnering with Bring, a Chicago-based delivery logistics startup, to give its shoppers last-mile grocery delivery in a new pilot program. Bring gives Walmart the ability to optimize driver schedules and automatically dispatch orders. And Groupon announced it's named Sarah Butterfass as its new chief product officer. She joins Groupon from E-Trade and will oversee the company's global product organization. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Another Friday regular on the program is Brian Summers. He's the aviation business editor for skift.com. Brian is with us this morning via Skype from London, where he is at a big conference there. Brian, since we talked to you last on this program, United Airlines matched the bag fee increase over at JetBlue. So now both airlines are charging a $30 bag fee. This was a conversation we had. What is the latest on this? Where is all of this headed?
Yeah, you asked me last week on this program what I expected to happen if a legacy carrier would match JetBlue. And I think I told you that I wasn't sure, but I thought the possibility would be no. Turned out I was wrong. United did match last week. Funny enough, they matched on Friday of a holiday weekend when they thought nobody was paying attention. But I imagine when people go to the airport in the future, they'll realize that a checked bag is $30 rather than $25. The logical next question, of course, is will other airlines match that? I think you have to assume that the answer is yes. American and Delta don't always do what JetBlue does, but they almost always do what United does. The three big carriers, they all tend to make the same decisions on this. So the only question is when. And there are actually some pretty strict rules on pricing that airlines have to follow. And they're not allowed to really say anything about future pricing. So it'll happen just like it happened with United. One day the bag fee will be $25, and then people will go on the website, and it will be boom. There probably won't be an announcement, and it will be $30. If you bought your tickets already, no need to worry. They'll still honor the old fee. But from whatever date on, that's when it'll be $30 a bag.
So let's game this out in the opposite, though. Let's say nobody follows United's move on this. What would you expect to happen then?
Well, Steve, I do follow this very closely. I'm in London right now at an airline conference. There are 1,000 or more airline people here. And yes, I know that the listeners would love it if American and Delta did not match. But the general belief is that American and Delta will match. I suppose if both airlines didn't, United and JetBlue might walk back the increase. Hard to know.
Yeah. So let's talk about the money involved here. How much does an airline like United expect to gain from upping its bag fees to 30?
To be honest, I don't know the exact numbers. Airlines are racking in billions of dollars a year in bag fee revenue. Clearly going up $5 per bag is going to be a lot of money. One of the other things that I have learned, anybody who has flown recently knows that U.S. airlines are trying very hard to get people to sign up for their credit cards. And the perk of the credit card is that you get a free checked bag. And, you know, there are some airline people out there that say, look, we raised the bag fee to $30, which I think a lot of people realize is quite a bit of money. Maybe more people will sign up for our credit card. Maybe we'll make money that way. So you can't just look at fee revenue itself. I should also say, I did interview JetBlue Airways CEO Robin Hayes today. Of course, he started this all. And he said that something that sounds pretty obvious. He said fuel's up 33%. We can't get it all back by raising fares. And we had to do this. So I guess he had to do it.
Let's talk about fares. They haven't been going up as fast as people, I think, would expect them to be going up because of oil. Is that the next place we would see people being hit here, is that with higher fares or no?
We will eventually see higher fares. There's no doubt about that. One of the reasons that you're not seeing higher fares is, first, there generally is a lag, and the lag can be as much as a year between when oil goes up and when airlines are able to pass on the cost of fuel to consumers. So that's one thing. The other thing is that summer fares tend to be pretty high, relatively. That's when the kids are off school. Everybody wants to go on vacation. Everybody wants to travel. Fall, which we're basically in right now, this period after Labor Day, is actually pretty soft for travel. So if airlines were to raise their prices too much, they might have like a lot of empty seats, more empty seats than they've had in a long time. So it's very hard to raise your prices in the fall. I think people will see it over Thanksgiving and Christmas. My guess is that in a lot of markets, they'll notice that prices are a lot higher than they used to pay. But during these shoulder seasons, there's just a limit to how much people are willing to pay.
This dovetails nicely into another story you've written about fees. The title of the story, Why Airlines Should Be More Creative as They Weigh Fee Increases. What do you mean by more creative?
Well, there's one fee in particular that I find a little odd, and it is actually the checked bag fee, right? Because passengers are used to paying different prices for their tickets, depending on when they bought or what they're flying. And there's this crazy thing with the airline industry where a checked bag always costs $25 or in the future $30. And it doesn't matter if you're flying from New York to Chicago or New York to Washington, D.C., or you're flying from New York to Hawaii. And it would seem to me that, you know, on a lot of flights, you could probably charge $12 or $14 or $16 a bag. And on some of the longer ones, especially during the peak season, Christmas time, you might charge more. I think it's just easier to charge $25 or $30 a bag, charge that flat rate. But a lot of people think at some point in the future, you could see the prices of fees vary in the same way that airline tickets vary in price.
Yeah. You know, in your story, you also write about potentially being more creative, like with seat fees or maybe priority boarding fees or a couple of the ideas.
Yeah, you know, there are actually seats on the airplane that are more valuable to people than others. And, you know, there are a lot of people that get upset about having to pay a fee for a seat that used to be free. I get that. But they're getting something of value. Maybe they're getting more legroom. Maybe it's easier to get out. Maybe they're getting a window seat that they want. With checked bags, I don't know. I mean, people check bags because they have to. They don't get much value out of it. I mean, if you take this a little further, you could say, look, I'd actually be willing to pay more to check a bag so it could come out first, right? That's something of value. But just to check a bag, I don't know.
Yeah. One of the other stories you've written about is national airlines. I know we kind of touched on this topic a few weeks ago. Your question was, why do national airlines still exist? Have you found the answer to that?
The answer is very often national pride and nostalgia, and because that's always the way that we've done it. There are a lot of airlines that have been around for 50, 60, 70, 80 years, and nobody wants to see them go. We're seeing this now with Air India. We're seeing with Alitalia, which is this iconic Italian airline that hasn't made money in I don't know how long. And these things, they just keep flying. You know, some folks describe them to me as tools of diplomacy or flying embassies. And that's all well and good. But, I mean, how long can a government help an airline keep running when that airline can't make money on its own? It doesn't make sense. But there is this idea that you can't be a legitimate country if you don't have your own airline, that it means something. It's not something that we think about much in the United States because we have so many airlines. But if you're a country in Europe or Africa and you're down to one airline, maybe you're going to try to make sure that airline keeps flying. One of the examples that I used was South African Airways. They're just not a very well-run airline, but they keep flying with massive government subsidies because nobody can think of a world where the national airline doesn't exist.
You're right in this that you know, travelers have moved on. They have moved on to other different brands. I guess in a country where there is choice, that's the situation, right?
Yeah, often they have. I mean, we see this in Europe. You know, a lot of countries have held on to their national brands, and that's all well and good. But people in Poland, they might be as likely to fly Ryanair, which is the Irish airline, than their own home airline. They don't worry so much about what a flag is on the airplane. But, you know, decades ago, it was much more important to people. Every country had to have its own flag carrier.
Brian, good stuff. We'll chat with you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com. Follow them at Skift on Twitter. And make sure you sign up for their weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report, skift.com/airline. And Brian's a good follow on Twitter as well, at Brian Summers. That's B-R-I-A-N-S-U-M-E-R-S on Twitter.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses later on Wall Street. The Dow futures off about a quarter this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are right there with the Dow. Crude oil is trading at $67 a barrel this morning. Gold and silver are trading higher as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning, Steve. All is right with the world because I had my Fay's pork chop barbecue at the sandwich fair yesterday.
Nice.
And despite the rain showers, I'm just amazed. A lot of people came out, sat under umbrellas in front of our open-air stage at noontime, and we just had a good time. The sandwich fair continues through Sunday at Sandwich, Illinois. If you haven't been there, Steve, you ought to head out.
You're making me hungry again for one of these sandwiches. I'm going to have to do that. Orion, what is the big news of the week? I know we're still waiting on Canada for the trade deal. Is that going to get done before the end of the week or not?
I don't think so. The headline that I just printed, U.S.-Canada trade talks grind on, but final issues are unresolved. And the U.S. source familiar with the discussions in Washington said it was still unclear whether the two sides could bridge the gaps or whether President Trump will choose a Mexico-only bilateral trade deal. So it's going to be tough, I think, to get that ground out there. In Canada, they've got that quota program for the dairy industry, and that is not acceptable to the United States and the dairy farmers here in this country. I think it's going to be a tough one to get done. I'm not going to make any predictions, but right now I'm not very optimistic that it's going to happen.
What would the future look like with it? So would we do like a bilateral separate deal with Canada on other issues? What would it look like if we lose them as a trading partner? I mean, that wouldn't happen, would it?
No, that would not happen. We're too close. And I, at the Farm Progress Show last week, I talked to the Director of Agriculture for the state of North Dakota, which is, of course, on the border. A lot of grain trucks that cross the border from Canada into the United States, livestock that make the transition from Canada to the United States. And I said, is it a shooting war yet? And he said, no, it's not. We're going to work on it and hope that we don't get to that point. But there is concern because despite what you hear from all of the countries involved, I think NAFTA has been a success, certainly for agriculture. And, you know, it's a $1 trillion trade issue that I think has worked. But a lot of people don't think it has. So,
How have the markets been over the last few days with all this ongoing trade talk?
Well, the markets, I think, are beginning to react more to weather than they are to trade at the moment. I have talked to quite a few farmers and talked to quite a few yesterday in northern Illinois at Sandwich, and I said, have you started cutting grain yet? And they said, no, we're going to wait a little while, because right now the crop is in good shape, standing well, and of course this time of the year you hope you don't get a strong wind that blows it over. But right now, Phil Nelson, who is active in Farm Bureau in Illinois, who said, I think I'll let Mother Nature dry the crop down instead of paying for the gas to do it. So I think we're keeping an eye on the hurricanes and the rain they're sending into this area. So we keep our fingers crossed this time of the year. Hope the weather isn't going to turn really bad.
What can we expect on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, Jim Fazell will be back. We're getting close to the end of the growing season for gardens and lawns and that type of thing. But he'll have a few more things to say. And so we, of course, take a look at markets. Naomi Bloom, who is with Stuart Peterson, analytical firm based in West Bend, Wisconsin, will be with us. And we'll, Saturday, tomorrow, U of I Salute to Agriculture and Food Day down at Champaign-Urbana, ahead of the football game tomorrow evening at the university.
All right, very good. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. This morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong, of course, at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday. It is September the 7th. Of course, the employment situation is at 7:30 Chicago time. That leads the business news today and will likely be the market mover. We'll also hear from a couple of Fed speakers, including Loretta Mester, Eric Rosengren out there speaking as well. Numbers from the Treasury Strips report due out later in the afternoon. Not a lot in the way of earnings reports today. Or other economic reports. It's the big jobs report.